Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. So we heard Mayor Mike Duggan, the mayor of the city of Detroit, during this week's State of the City speech, list a lot of new investments by Black developers here in the city. That includes a new plan to redevelop the Fisher Body plant, which sits right next to the intersection of I-94 and I-75. It is one of Detroit's most notorious symbols of blight and industrial abandonment. It has sat there for at least two decades now as an empty, rotting hulk. And city officials say the effort to turn that site into attractive mixed-income housing is the largest African-American-led development project in the city's history. The mayor also detailed lots of other developments, large and small, on the east and west and southwest sides of the city that are being led by Black developers. And let me say this, as somebody who pays pretty close attention to the things that are going on in the city and development, there were a lot of plans and projects that the mayor talked about that, frankly, I hadn't heard about, that I didn't know about. And I don't imagine that I was sitting there as the only person watching in a little bit of astonishment. Now, let's be clear. We hear lots about development in the city of Detroit all the time. We hear about great plans to redevelop areas of the city, and they don't always pan out. Or they pan out for some folks and not for others. We do have this incredible gap in our city between those who seem to be grasping the benefits of the things that are happening, and those who feel left behind. So the question with all of the things that the mayor was talking about, the real question is, will this benefit Detroiters? Will this benefit Detroiters' communities, the places where we live, the places where we recreate, the places where we work? They're fair questions, and I don't think we can be blamed for having just a little skepticism about these plans, all pretty on boards and on television, but what will they be like? How will they affect the things that we most need changed in our city? Here to talk about all of these efforts and a number of the other projects led by African Americans in the city is Nicole Sherrard Freeman. She is the City of Detroit's Group Executive of Jobs, Economy, and Detroit at Work. Nicole, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Stephen, and thanks so much for having me.
So I want to start with hearing just a little of the mayor's speech and the part specifically where he's talking about this incredible amount of investment by Black developers.
These owners are investing more than $500 million in Detroit's future. From one end of the city to another, Black developers with Black ownership are rebuilding the city.
The mayor's office tells us, Nicole, that you played a key role in the Fisher Body Plant redevelopment plan. Let's start there. Fill us in on what developers want to do with that site and how significant you think it is.
Stephen, that while the mayor's office did play a lead role in this development, we were, of course, supported by so many others across the administration and our partners at Detroit Economic Growth Corporation. We couldn't be more excited about Greg Jackson and Richard Hosey and their plans for Fisher Body. I mean, we've been looking at this structure since standing vacant since the late 80s. And, you know, it's always, I mean, you can't help but notice it when you drive by the intersection of I-94 and I-75, and that they were, first of all, willing to take it on. And second, taking it on with an eye toward preservation. I mean, if you've heard them talk about the structure of the building at all. It's in fantastic shape on the inside as it relates to turning it into more than 400 apartments with retail space on the first floor. It's just it's a remarkable plan, and it helps preserve some of Detroit's history.
So, as I said in the open, I think we get excited in Detroit about big projects like this, and this is one of the biggest, no question, that that we've heard about. And I think just symbolically, taking that structure at that site, as you point out, at that super busy intersection, everybody drives past there at some point and can't help but notice that this, you know, really massive footprint is in bad shape. But then the question is always, how strongly should we believe that these things will happen? I mean, we've seen plans announced in Detroit before that haven't come to be true. And then the question is, what impact does that have on the problems that Detroiters face all the time, every day in their lives? And I mean that both as just kind of a challenge to you and the administration, but also just as an opportunity to draw the connections, which I don't know that we can always immediately identify, those of us who are not in city government or not developers ourselves. Why does this matter in substantive terms to those of us who live here?
Sure. So let's start with your point, Stephen, about skepticism. I mean, I think Detroit is one of the most balanced and can be among the fairest, but is the most among the most full of the most critical thinkers I know. And so that the skepticism that you're speaking of, I think, is both natural and given, as you've said, and as your listeners know, so many past projects warranted. But let me tell you how this is different. Before anybody comes forward, certainly before Greg Jackson, his daughter Annika, and Richard came forward with this project, you got to know that they did their due diligence to understand what they were stepping into. In Fisher Body 21, they spent time doing the environmental work on the front end to first understand whether the prior reports about Fisher Body 21, those reports that said there is no saving this building, it has to come down. You got to know that they did a significant amount of due diligence before deciding for themselves, before coming forward to the city with a plan that they believed would make this work. They consulted with architects and engineers, certainly talked to the folks on their team and beyond who would be financing this. And, you know, as Greg mentioned in the announcement earlier this week, part of what's financing this is his own equity. And so I think what I hope listeners will think about, and what I hope we'll start to turn our attention to more broadly, as we talk about these projects and what African Americans are bringing forward, is this: nobody's going to come forward with a deal for the show, right? For the glitz and the glam and the cameras, and risk the embarrassment of having a project fall through. I think your listeners and others, Stephen, are more critical consumers of news. And developers know that. So nobody's going to come forward with you know, an idea or a plan that's later going to cause them great embarrassment. And then as it relates to the problems that Detroiters face every day and what connections does this project have to opportunity in the neighborhood, this isn't just about the housing, the 435 units in this $135 million investment, but it's also about the retail and commercial space that the developers are putting on the first floor and beyond. And it's what it, you know, it's also about what it'll do in that community. I mean, I went to elementary school just a few blocks down East Grand Boulevard, and you know, I've watched that neighborhood and what has happened over the past few decades, and this is going to represent a huge opportunity for the spinoff benefits of having affordable housing good, solid, beautiful housing and views of the city from the roof. I mean, what this will do for the neighborhood is really, Stephen, unparalleled.
And what's the time frame for this project in particular? I mean, again, it seems so massive. At least from the outside, it seems daunting. And I would love to have you talk just a little more about the condition. You've suggested that the condition is maybe not as bad inside as it appears from the outside. But how soon could Detroiters look forward to this opening up and welcoming new residents?
Yeah, so I will. I'll give you the projections that Greg and Richard and Annika shared earlier this week. But ultimately, leave those the finalities of that timeline to the developers. But you know, as I mentioned, they are already moving forward with the environmental work and the structural assessment. So while Detroiters can't see that part of the work happening yet, it's the part that happens. It's the part of the work that happens that, you know, you got to do to be sure that this ultimately this structure is sound and safe and can architecturally and structurally sustain what they're going to put in it. So that work, while it's invisible, that work is happening right now. Later this year, you'll start to see more movement on the site and then into next year start to see more significant work around the rehab that's happening there.
I'm talking with Nicole Sherrard Freeman, who is Mayor Mike Duggan's group executive of Jobs, Economy, and Detroit at Work. We're talking about the Mayor's State of the City address this week, in which he laid out a number of different pretty ambitious development plans, $500 million worth, that he says are led by Black developers and owners. That's a really important turn, I think, in the narrative around redevelopment here in Detroit. It speaks to the efforts toward inclusion. It speaks toward the efforts aimed at lifting Detroiters themselves as the city gets better and more popular. We'd love to hear from you about what you think about what the mayor said. Are you optimistic or are you pessimistic about the city of Detroit's future? Or are you maybe somewhere in between? Do you trust that these big redevelopment projects like Fisher will be successful? And what do you make of the increase in Black-led development projects here in the city? What does that signal to you about inclusiveness? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and Twitter, put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. My friend Chase Cantrell, who is one of the developers here in Detroit, is on Twitter asking about subsidy here in Detroit. All of us who are familiar with development in Detroit know it's very difficult to make the numbers work still in the city. If you just want to take a building, redevelop it, and open it for business, we still need a lot of government help for developers in that regard. So what needs to happen, he's asking, in Detroit to reduce that need? And I wonder if you can speak to the level of subsidy, for instance, that is involved in something like the Fisher renovation.
Sure. So, you know, again, we should leave speaking to the final numbers to Greg Jackson and Richard Hosey, but I can say broadly that what our partners at Detroit Economic Growth Corporation, who actually lead the underwriting on this work, so what Kenyatta Bridges and Kevin Johnson are doing are working through with Greg and Richard. Where are the opportunities, as Mr. Cantrell asks, to be sure that we are using public funding in the right way, helping developers close gaps where it makes sense for public incentives. We're expecting that, you know, there will be a historic tax credit potentially on this building, the neighborhood enterprise zone, among others. I mean, we haven't talked with city council about any of this, so I, you know, don't want to go into any of the any more details on this without talking to our partners. But we are expecting to, where it makes sense, use incentives to help this work develop. I mean, when you look across the whole of what developers are doing in the city, and specifically Black developers, as you're calling out, we've got to be sure that we are supporting Black developers who are taking on these massive, monstrous, complex projects in the same way that we support other developers where that makes sense and where they are willing to engage in the community benefits process. I mean, you know, Fisher Body 21, the size of the investment, $135 million, will trigger the community benefits ordinance. And when you talk with Greg and Richard about it, you know, you find that they are eager to talk with residents about what this development will mean in the community. And where a project triggers the community benefits ordinance, you can expect that from any other developer. And there are cases where the investment, the size of the investment on the project, does not trigger the community benefits ordinance. And I got to tell you, we've got developers who want to have conversations with the community and do what's right for the community, whether there's a community benefits ordinance or not.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. 313-577-1019. Before we get to callers, Nicole, I do want to talk about this larger blight elimination goal that the mayor has, and that is, of course, focused on the communities where we as Detroiters live more than where we work. Is it realistic to think that we're going to actually get to zero blight, as the mayor said? I thought that was a pretty bold statement to throw out there. It's not the first time he's hinted at it. The idea that we won't have any blight in the city of Detroit. Talk just a little about how close you think we can come to that.
Yeah, so, you know, I'll start here. 8 years ago, anybody who suggested that we'd be attacking these, you know, 11 major projects that had for decades been an embarrassment to the city, anyone who suggested that 8 years later we'd be at this point would have been laughed out of the room. That was a pretty audacious goal then, pretty bold. And so this goal too is bold. And, you know, I got to tell you, with the American Rescue Plan Act funding, our partners on city council who are, you know, eager to have us come forward and work with us on plans that eliminate blight, as the mayor described, the strength of the administration and, you know, Group Executive Brad Dick and Group Executive Donald Rencher and their teams and our partners. I mean, we are. I don't know if there's an adjective to describe this. So intensely focused on moving the city and the narrative from blight to beauty that I imagine we will hit the targets. I imagine we'll hit the targets we set.
Yeah. I want to get a couple phone calls in here before we have to break. Let's start with Sam in Detroit. Sam, what's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. My question is, it looks like a very nice ambition plan. I'm very optimistic. But my concern is, what kind of communications the city will use to make sure that the benefit of these plans will be introduced to other minorities, especially the Middle Eastern and the growing Afghani community? Because my personal experience that the city is not doing a good job, especially when you visit Detroit at work centers, you see posters and flyers about West Warren development in Arabic. I read it. It was very embarrassing, not appropriately translated, given the bad impression that the city does not care about with other minorities to communicate with them about their own language in an appropriate way. So hopefully this is one-time mistake, not a trend, and I wanted to hear the comment about this.
Yeah,
thank you.
Sam, I'm really glad you called and pointed that out. And Nicole, of course, this is a this is a really diverse city. It is a majority African-American city, and it's important that African-Americans participate more in opportunity and the economy. But we have lots of other ethnic backgrounds, people from other ethnic backgrounds here, and they feel left out too. And as Sam's pointing out, in some cases, the effort to reach out is not sufficient.
Hey, look, I first of all, Sam, thank you for your call and your comments. And you know, Stephen, I don't know if there's a way to get information offline on the translation that he's talking about. We would never want to translate any of our communications in a way that is embarrassing, incorrect, inaccurate. So the problem you just lifted up, Sam, we want to know about and fix. So I'd love the details of that offline.
Yeah, we can connect you too. Yeah,
that would be great. That would be great. But let me speak to the broader question and concern. I mean, our Civil Rights, Inclusion, and Opportunity Department, led by Kim Rustem, translates, has the responsibility for translating our communications into Spanish and Arabic and Bengali. And but even with that, we fully recognize that our efforts are probably still missing the mark. I mean, clearly, as Sam said. So we've got to do a better job on that front, and we've got to do a better job telling our stories. You know, our communications team led by Vicky Thomas and John Roach, I mean, they work hard to get stories out, but, you know, as you said at the open, Stephen, you sat there watching State of the City amazed at what you were seeing because you hadn't heard the stories. We've got to do a better job of ensuring that our community knows what's happening, and we're going to work closely with City Council to do that.
Yeah. Okay, Nicole Sherrard Freeman, it was really great to have you here with us on Detroit Today to explain all these ambitious plans in Mayor Mike Duggan's State of the City address. And, of course, we all are wishing the best for all of that and for us here in the city. Thanks so much for joining us.
And thanks for having me.
Coming up next, we are going to talk with Broadway icon and hometown Metro Detroiter Jeffrey Seller about his experience helping to create the beloved musical Hamilton, the return of live theater after the pandemic, and this profound influence that Jeffrey has had on Broadway over many, many years. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.